The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Now, many states in the US entering their fifth day of protests. This following the death of Duante Wright. The police officer involved in the incident, Kim Potter, has been charged with second-degree manslaughter in relation to the 20-year-old's death. Elsewhere in Minneapolis, of course, Derek Chauvin has pleaded the Fifth Amendment. Essentially, that means he will not be testifying in his ongoing trial. He's not going to answer questions. Chauvin, of course, has been charged with three offences in relation to the death of George Floyd last year. I'm joined now to talk about all of this and more by the DA for Suffolk County, Rachel Rollins. Rachel, it's good to talk to you again. You're very welcome back to the show. Can I ask, first of all, just about where we find ourselves and this consecutive day, fifth consecutive day of protest people facing into, your reaction, your view, your assessment?
It's devastating. It's really to the point where people are, we're exhausted and exasperated. It is a matter of interrupting the trial of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd to make sure that we know about the murder of Duante Wright for having an air freshener blocking the mirror in his car, or having a tag on the back of his car that's been expired for a month or two. As you know, I'm sure in Ireland, all of our state agencies are delayed right now. So our Registry of Motor Vehicles is months behind handing out those very tags. So, and then we had to interrupt what we knew about Duante Wright to hear about a 13-year-old that was murdered, Adam Toledo. Although he was murdered weeks ago, the body cam footage just came out now, and the police had lied and said that this 13-year-old had a gun. And in fact, he didn't. His hands were up. So there are, we are getting so close to the point of certain groups of people just not even having patience anymore to have to waste our breath and explain and justify our existence.
The fact that all of these are in the headlines at once, and bear with me, Rachel, because this sounds like a kind of a slight perverse question. Is it a good thing they're all in the headlines? And what I mean is, were these the type of things that have been happening for years, but haven't been getting attention?
Yeah, I mean, it is perverse that we both are thinking, goodness, is it good that this finally came to light? But, I push back and I say there's no other community but the Black community that we get blamed for our murders, right? Like, there is, the police have an incredibly hard job. And I have a deep, deep respect for the work that they do. But it can't be that they can show restraint, as we have seen in so many active shooter cases where overwhelmingly the perpetrator is white and male, that law enforcement is able to show the good thought process and restraint and de-escalation to get a Dylan Roof, who you may recall killed, I believe, 9 people in a church. Nobody doubts that he did that. He made it out alive. He was gently escorted into a police car by the police. And in fact, they stopped to make sure he got something to eat prior to bringing him to the police station because he was hungry. That's how certain communities are treated when they are mass murderers by our law enforcement. And the flipped side of that, or juxtaposing that, is Adam Toledo. And whether he had committed a crime or not, it is not the police's job to be judge, jury, and executioner. They are simply supposed to protect and serve and arrest and then get you to the court so a prosecutor, me, or somebody elected can make that decision about whether or not we're going to charge. And then a jury of their peers gets to decide. Of course, if you're a juvenile, it's a little different, but for adults, factually what happened in the case, when a neutral judge determines the law, and then you're sentenced. And all of that has been flipped on its head here. So I am happy it is exposed, but you know what? It was exposed with Rodney King.
Yeah.
It was exposed with the trial of O.J. Simpson. I'm going to be very honest. Of course I know that O.J. Simpson murdered those two people. I think what people were celebrating was that Furman, the racist police officer that lied, was finally exposed, and the jury got to see what certain communities had known for decades, if not at times centuries.
This maybe is straying into the realms of psychology a little bit, but you know, why do you think that is? You've got tens of thousands of law enforcement officers all over the United States, and in any group that large, you're going to have bad apples, if we'll call them that. You know, bad actors, people who are more inclined to do this type of thing. There's also, it seems, you know, that there's an institutional or a cultural problem, so that even those acting, you know, with the best of intentions are more inclined to treat a black person differently than they will treat somebody else, that they might treat me if I was driving down the street in Minneapolis with a fake $20 bill in my pocket for whatever it happens to be. Like, do you have an understanding of why that is?
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head. So a couple things. We've seen these are misdemeanor murders. Right. So in the United States of America, a misdemeanor is absolutely still a crime, but it is not as serious as a felony. And nobody's saying you can be killed for a felony, but George Floyd's counterfeit $20 bill might not have even resulted him in getting jail time, let alone a death penalty, right? Which is essentially what he got for that. When we talk about the culture, you know, I want you to hear me say I am the proud daughter of a second generation Irish American immigrant from Mayo, as you know, it's long suffering Mayo, right? But I will say that my dad is also a veteran. He's a former corrections officer. And there is a culture where military comes into law enforcement. And I believe that should be the case in the sense of if you've served our country, I do believe you should get a leg up regarding, you know, firefighter jobs, police jobs, and these civil service jobs. But where the conflict comes in is when we are talking about community policing, which is the language that we use about law enforcement in our communities in the United States of America, but you come from a military, you know, war minded sort of, you know, antagonistic background, right? Where you're going into literally battle. Yeah. Those two things have a hard time rectifying themselves, right? So yeah. That's number one. Number two, with the military preference in the United States of America, oftentimes you don't have to be a resident of the community. You don't have to live in the community where you are serving as a police officer. And I think there is a disconnect. We've gone away from the days of the officer walking the beat, you know, is what we call it in the United States, right? Of knowing every person in every house, knowing all of their goods and their bads, and being a trusted member of the community. Look, are there dangerous people in community? Absolutely there are, but there are dangerous people in every community. And what I think we need to be better at is the sort of not allowing people to be bystanders. As a result of this George Floyd trial, and we've only seen the trial of Derek Chauvin, but there were three other officers that stood by that have been charged, right? And their trials will be starting soon. Lots of legislation in the United States of America on the state level have gone to the bystander requirements of members of law enforcement.
If you're just tuning into The Hard Shoulder, Rachel Rollins, the DA for Suffolk County in Massachusetts, is my guest. In terms of changing that culture, you talk about, you know, lawyers and the legal system being able to do it incrementally. Do you fear that it gets consumed by the culture wars or the ideological wars? Because, and let me put it this way, I find it really unsettling on my television screen when I'm watching these US cities and I see what are meant to be police officers essentially looking like the military on the streets, you know, with assault rifles, and they're in these big armored personnel carriers, usually that have come back from Iraq or Afghanistan and are not needed anymore. So local police departments buy them up cheap. What I find most unsettling, though, is that the people who defend that most, the most ardent defenders of those police departments and their spend and their militarism, are people who also say that they need the Second Amendment so that they can carry weapons to protect themselves against a tyrannical government. you know, it just strikes me that it's already part of the culture wars.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's fascinating to me is when we think about the insurrection that occurred on January 6th at our Capitol, and the restraint our police showed there, because there was not a sort of us versus them mentality. You know, it is so fascinating to me to see that, you know, through our, you know, I think the lens of the media, we have seen in the United States just this, this, and I have it myself, an automatic snapback to believing law enforcement in every way, shape, and form. And that's what's fascinating about this, right? There is not another profession that has a 0% error rate, right? And the police believe they are the only profession that never make a mistake. And so that's the problem we have with these police unions. I'm the proud daughter of two union members. I want strong unions, but what we can't do is look at a group of people who self-regulate and self-discipline and operate in the cloak of darkness and have the ability to kill you, right? The legal and lethal authority to use force that can be up to and including death. And so there is a piece of this where the stakes are far too high, where an oops, or I thought it was a taser. I thought this was my taser. Like, that is just an abject failure of just the, I'm terrified that if this person, non-dominant hand, had to reach across to get a taser that is neon and weighs, you know, many, many times less than the firearm that they have. And this person is training other officers and was the president or is the president of the police union. This is not our shining star of law enforcement. And what we need is, I don't want to hear, I'm nervous, I'm scared, it's really hard to do my job. Then we need some different people doing that job. Because if you get a service rifle or weapon when you do this job and you have the ability to take people's lives, I don't want you to be unstable and mentally ill and not capable of being yelled at. Let me tell you something. People yell at me all day and I don't have a weapon, right? But you have to withstand that. And if you can't, then you should not be in this job.
Yeah. Kim Potter is who, of course, you're talking about there, that the excuse of reaching for the taser and picking up the gun accidentally. Rachel, a pleasure to speak to you, as always. Rachel Rollins, the DA for Suffolk County in Massachusetts. Stay with us here on The Hard Shoulder. The historian Donald Fallon will be with me after the break, looking back on the life and times of Michael D. Higgins, who is about to turn 80 in office.